Welcome to the Not Old Better Show. I'm your host, Paul Vogelzang. As part of our Smithsonian Associates Art of Living series, our guest today on the Not Old Better Show is Dr. Craig Robertson. Dr. Robertson has written a new book entitled The Passport in America, The History of a Document. Historically, the passport originated as an official letter of introduction addressed to foreign governments on behalf of American travelers, but as Dr. Robertson will show, it became entangled in contemporary negotiations over citizenship and other forms of identity documentation.
A passport is one of the most powerful documents you can possess. It's also one of the more socially and politically contentious. The profound shifts in appearance and use and meaning produced a document that came to play a much larger role in American life than originally intended. The history of the U.S. passport is a story of how a few pieces of paper came to produce new answers to the question, who are you?
That, of course, is our guest today, Dr. Craig Robertson, who will be at the Smithsonian Associates Program presenting stories from his new book, The Passport in America, The History of a Document, Thursday, January 25th, 2018, 6:45, at the Ripley Center in Washington, D.C. Please join me in welcoming to the Not Old Better Show via Skype, Dr. Craig Robertson. Well, Dr. Craig Robertson, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Paul. It's great to be here.
Dr. Robertson, I personally love stories about things or activities, even details that might be ignored in many ways, but are fascinating once you start to uncover the history and the origin. Passports, interestingly, to me certainly, fall into that category. And so I wonder if you can take us back all the way to the biblical times when passports actually get a mention in the Bible, right?
That's correct, yeah. Things that we would probably think of as safe conduct passes or letters of introduction, they oftentimes were called passports. So we can go all the way back to the Bible. We can go to the Middle Ages where we can see king's licenses and safe conducts. For historians of the passport, and there are a few of us, some of us would probably say that really the passport as we know it today, you could trace back to the French Revolution. Or I would prefer to say, really, it's a product of World War I.
Well, these passports, while they might be viewed today as routine, they have not always been that way, and they played a real role in American life, almost a profound role, and that certainly was more so than was originally intended. Would you agree?
I would, definitely. Yeah, those early U.S. passports were sort of these perfunctory documents because they weren't required for international travel until World War I. So in the 100 years or so before World War I, when the U.S. State Department issued passports, they were letters of introduction. They were not really certificates of citizenship. They could be issued by governors. They could be issued by mayors. They could even be issued until 1856 to non-U.S. citizens.
You know, I find that really interesting that the State Department not only issued passports, but that states, governors, and mayors could issue passports too. How did that even work?
Well, not that well, to be honest, particularly if you're a traveler. Again, in the second half of the 19th century, the U.S. government tried to crack down on the issuance of passports by people outside the State Department, but they failed. And to be honest, they didn't try that hard. So you could be traveling through Europe with a document that you think is a U.S. passport, and you present it to a foreign official or a U.S. ambassador, and they'll go, nope, that's issued by the governor of Minnesota. That's of no value at all. So, yeah, it was a really kind of ad hoc system that reflected the fact that these documents were not really of value to foreign countries, particularly at the border.
I've read a couple of articles by you, and you mentioned while passports were for the traveling elite, and that certainly has changed, you suggest that there's kind of this reverse absurdity that exists when the term passport nuisance is coined, and that almost a question about how government would force people of the quote-unquote better class to be documented, like common criminals.
Yes. So as I mentioned, World War I is really when the passport is a document that we would recognize emerges, and most importantly, emerges as a required document. that was meant to be an emergency one-off period, one-off situation during the war. It continued on in the 1920s, and as we know, the passport has always since then been a required document. So when people started to travel again in the 1920s, particularly transatlantic steamships, suddenly they were asked for a passport. And this was called the passport nuisance by newspapers and magazines. And it was, as you note, it was particularly seen, the request for a passport was seen as an offence by those who had never been asked to prove their identity before. Identity documents in the eyes of your middle-class white American traveler were for suspect populations, like maybe immigrants or criminals or those declared to be insane. But traveling was not a suspicious activity. So in their minds, they shouldn't be asked to prove their identity. And it kind of showed that the government didn't trust them, and they definitely didn't like that.
Another thing that the many U.S. citizens still don't like and are a bit skittish about today is this sort of national identification system. But there grew an interest in separating traveling citizens from these unwanted aliens at U.S. ports, and that became a real issue to deal with too, right?
Yeah, the passport system in terms of the U.S. border really sort of, I guess, came into its own with the 1921 and 1924 Immigration Acts. So all of a sudden, you know, those acts are managing immigration by nationality, and you need documents to both ensure that people, the right number came in on the monthly quota, but also nationality is something that's really hard to read off someone's body. And so you needed this document to say, oh, yes, you are coming from the right country, because you couldn't even in that sense just use whiteness as a way to determine who was a citizen and who wasn't.
So some of this even emerged during World War One, when there were some emergency measures that were passed and demanded from passports so that everyone entering the country at that time had one. But after the war ended, the requirements never went away.
That's right. Yeah. So World War One really, as I say, is the origin point of the contemporary passport. And that's when all of a sudden, in the interests of national security, the United States government, along with most other Western governments, decided they needed to know exactly who was entering and leaving a country. And therefore, you needed some system, some document to record that information, or to allow that information to be recorded. And so various ways to try and do that were introduced at the U.S. border, though. During World War One, though oddly, it wasn't until 1918, right at the end of the war, that finally congressional approval came for a passport system. Prior to that, the State Department just worked with steamship companies and basically made steamship companies require people to have passports, even though there was no legal obligation.
And then if we jump ahead a little bit historically, passports played a role in the Red Scare issues that were, you know, around McCarthyism. And this was an attempt to almost impede communists from entering the country.
That's right. And actually, it was also to impede perceived communist sympathizers from leaving the country. So, yeah, by the 1950s, we have a system that is much more efficient than what was going on in World War One, and it allows the State Department to manage the movement of citizens. Yeah, and so these decisions relating to managing and policing the movement of the U.S. citizen really stretched the limit of the law.
Fascinating. Well, Dr. Craig Robertson, I know you're very busy, and we really appreciate your time. There are two stories I wonder if you could leave us with that I just found hilarious. I'll just refer to them as one, the mustachioed gentleman, and two, the lovesick damsel. And I wonder if you wouldn't mind telling those two stories for us as we just kind of make our way out.
And no problem at all, Paul. I'll start with the lovesick damsel. This is a story related to the idea of the passport nuisance, and particularly the concerns over passport photographs, because it's clear from the very beginning of the passport that no one likes their passport photograph. So this story I found, it was a great story I found, and it was on a woman's page in a newspaper in the late 1920s, and a woman had written into an advice columnist, and she was referred to as a lovesick damsel, and her question was, how do I know my fiancé truly loves me? And the advice columnist reply was, send him your passport photo, and if he survives the shock, then you know he truly loves you. The other story actually is the story that got me thinking about writing this book, and it's an Associated Press article from 1923 that I read in the New York Times, and it's about a Danish gentleman who travels to Germany. And when he arrives in Germany, he has what he considers to be a very fashionable handlebar-type moustache. But while in Hamburg, he discovers that this is no longer fashionable, if it ever was, and he shaves it off. And when he goes to leave, German border officials won't let him leave because he doesn't look like the passport photo. And so according to the Associated Press story, what he then does is he stays in Germany and regrows his moustache so he looks like his passport photograph. And what I find great about that story is, even if it didn't perhaps happen exactly as reported, though I don't want to question the reliability of the Associated Press, what it does speak to is this whole anxiety about and around the passport nuisance, right? That suddenly someone is telling you what you look like and who you are.
Fascinating. Well, Dr. Craig Robertson, author of the book, The Passport in America, The History of a Document, we're so grateful for your being here. There are going to be a lot more stories at the Smithsonian Associates event coming up, but thanks so much for your time today.
Oh, thanks for inviting me, Paul, and I'm really looking forward to talking to the Smithsonian Associates.
Well, we'll see you there. Thank you, Dr. Robertson. My thanks to our guest today, Dr. Craig Robertson, who will be presenting stories from the book, The Passport in America, The History of a Document, at the Ripley Center in Washington, D.C., January 25th, 2018. You can find out more information about this presentation on our website. My thanks as well to the Smithsonian team for all they do to support our interviews. As usual, we'll post links to everything, and also as usual, my thanks to you, the listeners, for joining me today. Your time is valuable, and I'm grateful you're spending some of it with me today. I'm always interested in feedback, and you can leave that at iTunes, Google Play, or send me an email at info@notold-better.com. Stay tuned for our next show, another great one, as we talk about better, the Not Old Better Show. Thanks to all, and remember, offer some kindness, service, and love to everyone you meet. You'll never regret it, and you'll make a difference. Thanks, everybody.